I don't remember a baby crying in this. Either. Do you? I don't remember
this. Is
this
what you used to play to get your girls to go to sleep when they were babies?
Yeah. Yeah, it was like a white noise machine. Scared the daylights out of them. Did you know that this song was also written by John Carpenter, who wrote the screenplay?
I did not know
that.
Yeah,
very talented. There's all kinds of weird sound effects that don't usually go with this.
I think this is Darth Vader playing it.
It is. To scare his son, young Luke Skywalker.
Spoiler alert.
Oh, sorry. Hi, everybody. It's Bill F. It's Wendy Snyder. It's
Happy
our
Halloween
show. You don't like to be scared.
I hate being scared.
I know you do, because I've accidentally scared you many times, and I will continue to do that.
I'm surprised you didn't today.
Not today. Today it's expected today. You do it on days you don't expect it.
Yeah, I guess
you know
you're
it's
right.
Coming. Your guard is up. I'll get you when you least expect it. I'll get you on Arbor Day. That's the day you don't expect anyone to scare you.
I am Groot.
Today I will plant a tree in your name, but on Arbor Day, look out, because you're in for trouble.
Venetian night. No one's expecting anything out of Venetian
night. Nobody. People are very at ease on Venetian night. That's a great time to scare people.
Nice costume, Bertrand.
Shush.
Aw, he was nice.
Last year, he dressed as me. He was me.
I was.
Oh,
that was
fun.
Yeah, that was fun.
That was a lot
totally
of fun.
I totally forgot about that.
It's like looking in a mirror. I couldn't tell who was who.
I'm not a big costume guy.
Really? Because we're not either. Yeah. We're the only show that didn't dress up. And Jasmine, our
producer came through. She's all dressed up.
She's a killer bee.
Yep.
Word.
Yes, she is. And she had car trouble today, and I kept thinking, what's worse than having car trouble dressed as a bee? Because you're out there on the highway, and people go, well, there's a bee, and they're having car trouble.
There have got to be all kinds of those weird situations right now, you know, where people are stuck and waiting for an elevator. Whatever.
This is the lamest holiday.
Oh, don't
ever.
Say that.
I'm sorry.
It's not. It's for kids. But people forget. It's supposed to be for kids.
So here's the deal. I had did a little segment on this on the Biz Lunch on costumes.
Yeah.
It didn't really become a kid's holiday until after World War II.
Was it originally an adult's holiday?
It started with women flirting with men back in the 19th century.
Oh.
Like showing their pantaloons a little bit.
Oh.
Really?
So, you know, because it's still, we can think it's being sexed up now.
Yeah,
kind of started a little sexy.
So it's reverted back to its original form.
Sexy Betsy Ross costume was the first one.
Nice flag. Nice. Yeah.
I can't remember the last time I dressed up. I know that there's a work party happening today.
That we conveniently lost our invitations to.
Yeah, right? I never got one.
Because if we go and we're dressed like this, like us, then everybody will comment. Oh, not team players.
The last time I dressed up, I know it was, I haven't willingly put a costume on since college.
That's about right.
Oh, I've done it since then.
But every time I've done it, I've been forced to, or, you know, I didn't really want to.
Right,
it
wasn't
reluctantly. Right.
Well, you asked me yesterday when the last time was, and I said high school, and then I realized that was the last time I did any trick-or-treating was my freshman year in high school. But the last time I wore a costume was actually when you and I worked together at The Loop and we did like an overnight Halloween party and I was the Green Hornet.
Oh, I do remember that. What was I? Was I a vampire? Because I know there was a listener who actually made me fangs that fit on my teeth.
Oh, really?
And
I don't think you were a vampire for that. Maybe that was
something
else.
Was I a witch? Careful how you answer that.
Not that night you weren't.
But really, some listener made me these fantastic fangs, which I almost was going to wear today.
You still have those?
I can't find them.
Oh.
I have a black cape.
Yeah.
I wear enough makeup anyway, so Halloween should be my favorite holiday.
It should be.
But yeah, I should have done that. That's the easy way to do it. I was Mario one year, and just this was probably 5-8 years ago. I dressed as Mario.
Yeah.
And went trick-or-treating with the
kids. Oh, you did?
Trick-or-drinking in our neighborhood.
Yeah.
But my kids haven't trick-or-treated, which is great because they stay home and answer the door now because I get annoyed when the doorbell rings every minute.
That's
so
nice.
My wife volunteers at a house, and so she's going to be up with those kids today.
Like a haunted house?
No, like a community house in Waukegan. And so it's just going to be me.
Yeah.
And I think I might get a haircut because no one else will be getting a haircut. And
that's your costume.
I'll be there for
I'm crazy haircut guy.
I mean, I'll be there for part of the trick-or-treating, but I'm like, well, you know.
What hours is your town?
Too many.
Because we're 4 to 8.
We're probably about 5, yeah, 4 to 7
I
or something.
I think we're the same. I don't know that I'm a fan of the start and end time. I mean, I guess if you're an adult, you go, yeah, that's plenty. I don't want to spend the whole day. But I, as a kid, if I only had 4 hours, I'd feel tremendously ripped off.
No one sticks to it anyway, so I say just lift the ban, the Halloween candy ban, because each town, and it's not a universal thing. Every town has a different thing, so mm-hmm. when it ends at an early town, people come to your town,
right?
And they keep trick-or-treating. So Jimmy Mack handled buying all the candy yesterday,
yeah.
And I think we're going to have enough because it's going to be freezing tonight.
That's the part that's so unfair, is if you're a kid, you look forward to Halloween and your costume, and now a lot of kids, whatever their costume is, it's that guy in a coat.
I know, it stinks.
You don't look like Buck Rogers in a coat.
That's so funny.
And for the record, I know no kid is going to be Buck Rogers. I live in a different decade. But whoever you are, let's say Buzz Lightyear. Oh, look, it's Buzz Lightyear in a coat.
Take off your coat. Let me see your costume.
Right.
But it's cold.
And can I tell you what the worst words to ever hear on Halloween are? The absolute worst words? What are you supposed to be?
Yeah,
remember,
I'm with you.
You're some kid and you're so proud of your costume. I'm Tarzan. Who are you supposed to be? I'm Tarzan. Oh, yeah, I kind of see it. Yeah.
Yeah, nobody ask that tonight, please.
I'm Tarzan in a coat.
No one sticks to the rules. And then this morning I said to Jim, what are our hours in LaGrange? And he said 4 to 8.
Yeah.
And he goes, but I'll give a little wiggle room till 9. I said, no, at 8 o'clock the light goes off.
That's it.
And he's... I don't know what's happened to Jim.
Are they allowed your door at 8? Is it like 8 o'clock shut off? Like if the kid hasn't got up the stairs to your door?
Finish them up.
You just said you thought there should be no hours.
I know, but then it was like at 8 o'clock, then I can watch TV or do whatever I'm going to do and not have to worry about the door ringing or doorbell ringing and the dog barking. And Jim's like, I'll let him go till 9. I said, but you're not supposed to. And he mm-hmm. goes, Wendy, people work, they come home, they have to get their kids ready and take them out. I'm like, what has happened to you?
You got to get yourself on, never mind.
On what?
It was just so close. I'm not going to do it. No.
But I do think back of when the kids were little and we were working 9 to 5.
Yes.
I never was, because in radio you don't really do that. But Jim was, so he'd come home from work and we'd get the kids dressed up and we'd hope for a warm day so it wouldn't be, the man in the yellow hat with a coat.
Right, right, right.
And then we would enjoy taking the little kids, but once they can trick-or-treat on their own, I'm done with it.
You don't like it anymore.
No.
Now, I don't know if your thing was like this where you lived, but in Oak Forest, there was always a Halloween party at school that day, so you wore your costume. Then we would trick-or-treat on our way home from
yep,
school.
Every year.
And then trick-or-treat until we literally collapsed late at night. We wouldn't stop until we were just out of gas.
Well, no one does that now because of these stupid hours, but I remember completely as a kid, you would trick or treat on your way home, drop off your books,
right,
and then just continue on your way.
Right.
It was nonstop trick or treating, like till at least 10 o'clock.
Yeah, at least.
I think we, as kids, probably pushed it past 10, but then as we got a little older, it's like maybe we shouldn't ring the doorbell after 10.
Right. Now, is Tony Preckwinkle going to sit out in front of our house and tax each piece of candy as we give it out? I hope she doesn't do that.
You just gave me an idea. I'm going to give the kids soda so I can tax them. And then I will make money this year.
Keep track.
You could dress as Tony Preckwinkle.
What are you having, a mug root beer? That's an extra 14 cents. What are you having, a Sprite? Extra 14 cents.
I would make out like a bandit.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's not trick or treat. It's soda and pay.
Yeah.
I like it.
That's what it's called. All right, let's do this. We'll take a quick break and then more discussion. Want to jump in? You can at 312-981-7200. It's Bill and it's Wendy on WGN. Hey, kids, go to Wendy's house tonight. She's giving out Natron's Healthy Trinity. That's fun. Can I have one for my brother? He's sick today.
I'm not sharing it.
Make them better?
With them. I hoard it for me and my family.
I've told this story before. On our block, every year, we'd get a visit the day before Halloween from Steven Jackson, who lived on the block next to ours. He lived on the block behind ours. And Steven Jackson would explain at every door that his grandmother is sick and the family is going to visit her out of town the next night, so he would not be able to trick-or-treat. So if they wouldn't mind so much, tonight's his night to trick-or-treat. So we'd give Steven Jackson candy, and then the next day on Halloween, Steven would come by again.
Why
did that every year.
Why is Steven Jackson not our president?
He should be our president. That's good thinking. Twice the candy.
You gave me a great idea, which I it's too late because I don't have enough soda. I haven't gone to DuPage County to buy it yet.
Load up.
But if you do give soda out to the kids, you can charge them for tax. Mike, you're familiar with the soda giveaway?
Yes. I have a client of mine. Every year, he started giving out 2-liter bottles of soda.
Wow. Wow.
And I mean, and if you had three kids, the parents would be like, oh, come on, you know, because they got to carry, you know, you got this little pumpkin. And
yeah.
So now they got used to it. No, it's true. And he, this year, unfortunately, they're not going to be home for Halloween. So, but all prior years, they give out 2-liter bottles of soda.
Very generous.
So, oh, yeah. And it would be, you know, it could be name brands or just any kind. You buy it through the year, you know, and stack it up in his garage. And they would come out. They live out in Burr Ridge, and that's what they would do. It was a lot of fun. So I thought, could you imagine, here you are with this 2-liter bottle. You got a kid. You're, you know, really slows you down when it's trick-or-treating, and you won't have to pay tax this year.
Very
right,
true.
That's a good idea. Mike, thank you very much. Happy
You're
Halloween.
Welcome. You too.
Did you used to trick-or-treat where the, quote-unquote, where the rich people live?
Oh, yeah. Full-size candy bars.
Yeah, Payless. We'd go to Payless. Because the rich people live there, and huge candy bars.
There were just, we didn't go to different neighborhoods because we didn't have cars. We were younger.
Right.
We didn't want to ride our bike because my angel robe would get caught in the spokes.
Yep.
But we would know there were some really nice houses in mm-hmm. Brookfield. Mm-hmm. Not many, but a few.
A couple.
And you would get the full-size candy bars.
Right.
And then you'd try and change your costume up a little bit and go back again.
You'd always hear stories, too, like as life would go on about, you know, like when Michael Jordan played here. Oh, my kids went to trick-or-treat at Michael Jordan's house and gave him each season tickets. No, he didn't. You'd always hear stories like that. He didn't give him season tickets for Halloween.
I never heard stories
oh, yeah.
like that.
Yeah.
Did you live in the embellishment neighborhood?
Yes. Yes.
John, what are you going to do for the trick-or-treaters tonight?
Well, usually I sit outside because I have steps. I don't want to go up and down steps, you know, 100 times. So I sit outside and hand out candy, but it's going to be so cold tonight. I usually end up putting out the candy on the steps and hoping that the first kid doesn't steal all the candy, you know. It doesn't, you know, should just take one, but
it doesn't work out for you, does it?
People do. Do other people just leave their excess candy on the steps?
No, I don't think a kid has ever followed that. Even the most honest of kids would just go, I don't think so. All this candy and no. Although now anyone could have security cameras, but what are you going to do? Take a kid to prison?
Press charges?
Right, right. I hope
yeah,
it works for you.
You got to hope that, yeah.
That's a good idea, though, to just sit out and move them along and then
sure.
8 o'clock close up shop.
Maybe.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks, John.
It's great. Yeah.
Thank you, John.
It's usually, but it's going to be so cold. I don't know how long I'm going to last out there.
It is going to be cold. The coldest Halloween, did I read this, in like 40 years?
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's not good. All right. Thanks, John.
Thank you, John. And if I don't know if you like black licorice.
Nuh-uh.
You don't like a good
no.
Good and Plenty?
Good and Fruity I do, but not Good and Plenty. It's too.
If you can chew the candy on the outside off and then spit out the
licorice.
Then
it'd be all right. Yeah.
I have mixed emotions on black licorice. Sometimes I enjoy it.
Really?
Sometimes I'm like, why would anybody eat this?
Yeah, it's not for me.
What were those candies? Were they Snaps?
Yeah.
Those were atrocious.
Was Snaps the one that you could make like a little bit of smoke or something come out of it? Was
yeah,
because
they were kind of like a smashed tubular thing
right.
in pastel colors.
Right. Right.
It was a powdery covering on like real licorice. I don't think they added any sugar to that licorice. It was like...
So would you blow on it and make smoke? So, there was something, some element of it that
yeah.
would make some kind of smoky thing.
It was
out.
Powdery. The
yeah, right.
The dusting on it was powdery, and they were horrible. Every once in a while, the Good and Plenty, because it was sweetened so much with sugar that it made it tastier. But there's a warning I've seen on CNN. The Food and Drug Administration has posted a warning on its website urging people to keep their black licorice consumption to a minimum.
Because why? What happens?
Too much of the old-fashioned favorite can cause health problems such as irregular heart rhythm, especially in people over 40.
Oh.
Black licorice contains a sweetening compound called glycyrrhizin.
Say that again.
glycosylicism, which can cause a drop in potassium levels. With low levels, some people might experience high blood pressure, swelling, and even congestive heart failure.
That's nice for a kid to worry about on Halloween. High blood pressure, heart failure.
This is mainly in people over 40.
Over 40.
I don't think you should be trick-or-treating.
Right. At that point, you might want to hang it up.
The good news is that potassium levels return to normal after you stop eating copious amounts of black licorice, but I have never, ever heard of a warning on black licorice.
I don't know anybody who eats a lot of it. Like,
you
once
can't.
You have it, you go, all right, I had a couple pieces. I remember what it tastes like. I'm done with it. Do you give more candy if a, let's say a kid comes up and he's really put a lot of time into his or her costume. You give him a little extra candy for that?
If they come by themselves and it's a great costume, I will say, you know, pick three or four.
Oh, pick three or
They're
four.
They're just fun size.
That's nice. That's very
And listen,
nice.
I hate to say this, but you can't go smaller than a fun size.
No, that's the limit right there.
They have the little tiny, not so fun size, but they're like a, they're just too little.
Right.
They're miniatures, I guess.
Right. Now, have you learned this? If you give, let's say you have a pumpkin filled with candy bars and you hold it out and you say to the kid, go ahead, pick. A lot of times you'll see a kid reach in, and the way it's supposed to work is a kid reaches in and takes one, maybe two. But you ever have a kid who just takes a whole handful, puts it in the bag, and looks at you like, what are you going to do? I'm six. You can't do anything to me. I'm 6 years old.
Well, that's where I say, again, if there's a big group, I will say, okay, pick one.
Pick one.
If there's someone by themselves or maybe two kids, I'll be like, go ahead, pick two.
Right. But that's up to your discretion. You don't leave that up to the kid, right? Because the kid's going to go, look at all the candy. I'm in heaven.
But how can you expect a kid to not take handfuls?
Right. But they always have that look like, I know what I'm doing is wrong, but you didn't really,
you
were
specify.
Very vague on how many I could take. So I'm going to take as many as my little hand will hold. I wonder how many kids put stick-em on their hands.
No one.
Like NFL stick-em on their hands and just reach in. Wow, you got 30 pieces of candy.
And have you noticed that the fun size are much smaller than they used to be?
Are they smaller? Do they seem smaller?
They're smaller.
Are they smaller?
They're really smaller.
Did the size of fun diminish since we were kids?
It's not so much fun anymore.
It's not as much fun. It used to be a lot more fun.
All right.
Oh, do we have time for another?
Can we just do one?
Yeah.
You had mentioned, who's your friend that should be president? Jackson.
Stephen Jackson.
Stephen Jackson, who trick-or-treated the day before Halloween because his grandma was sick and they needed to visit her.
That was his story.
That's a good one.
Every year he would pull this off.
Diane, you trick-or-treated twice?
Yes. When I was a kid, I lived in Joliet, Illinois, and this is the 1950s, and it was legal back then to trick-or-treat on the 30th and the 31st.
Why?
So I don't know why, but it was great for us. I'd go one night at my grandma's house, and then I'd go the second night in my own neighborhood, and I would get two huge bags full of candy.
That's
it
excellent.
It was great.
Do you still have some of that candy?
I'll look around.
Bill. All right, maybe see if you have some. All right.
Well, happy Halloween. Are you dressing up or anything today?
I might put a witch's hat on or something, sure.
I wear one every day, Diane. Happy Halloween.
Same to you guys.
Thank you.
Never heard that rule, the 30th and the 31st.
I never heard of that either.
I kind of remember that now that she said that.
Really?
I think maybe when I was a kid we did I don't know.
Why do you get 2 days in the South Suburbs?
Well, we were farm country then, so
the houses are farther between.
My mom would bring me out to my Aunt Opal, and Aunt Opal would make popcorn balls every year. Yeah,
that sounds nice.
You had more turf to cover.
I was so excited to get a popcorn ball from this one neighbor. Every year they gave popcorn balls.
Yeah.
I was so excited. That was the first house I would go to. And then I realized I don't even like popcorn balls.
Yeah, they're not that good.
They're dry.
They can be a little like a rock.
They're fun to whip at people,
yes.
though.
Yes. good weapon.
They take up time. They keep you from the good stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
It's true. All right, a break and then more show. Steve has the news in a few minutes. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Let it go, Bill. Just let it go.
Words to live by.
Little girls dressing up as Elsa from Frozen should just let it go because her character promotes, quote, white beauty.
Oh, come on.
According to Sashi Ferris, who writes in her blog, Raising Race-Conscious Children, in a post that went viral and was picked up by Cosmopolitan magazine. She also says, unless you're Polynesian, dressing up your child as Disney's Moana is racist.
I don't know about that. Is Come that racist? On. If a kid sees a movie, a kid sees a Disney movie and admires that princess, why not? Dress him up like Moana.
What if you are a white girl and you want to be Elsa?
It's okay by me, but she says that this is supporting
beauty.
White beauty. Well, the character's white and she's beautiful, so, you know.
So
what do you
get
do
rid
with
of
that?
The character then.
The movie won't be as good.
The mere possibility of someone dressing up in what could be viewed as an offensive costume is causing several colleges to proactively warn students. There are guides out there, checklists, workshops.
Oh,
God,
no.
It's Halloween.
That's
they are
a
even
bit much.
Offering 24/7 counseling.
That seems extreme.
Recently.
Why would you need. What? I don't understand why you would need counseling for this.
I don't know. The University of St. Thomas in Minnesota put up a costume or culture appropriation flyer listing unacceptable costumes and clothing. Would you like to hear some of them?
I would love to.
You cannot wear Native American headdresses.
It's so funny you say that because I remember one year, the year I was in Cub Scouts, I was only in Cub Scouts for 1 year. So they went, if you were in an odd den, because there were 14 dens in our troop.
They were all odd, weren't
they? Every one of them odd in their own way. So if you were in an odd-numbered den, you were a cowboy, and the even ones were Indians, Native Americans. And I was thinking to myself, I don't think they would do that now.
No, you can't.
I don't think they would allow that.
You can't wear a Mexican sombrero.
Hmm. Interesting.
You can't wear a geisha outfit.
So far, if I'm reading this correctly, any cultural outfit of any kind, unless you are a member of that culture, would be insensitive.
I don't even
think, to this.
Even if you are that culture, I don't think you can wear that. And, of course, any form of blackface, which we know.
This morning I saw what I consider to be a hysterical funny costume or series of costumes. It was four African-Americans, and they were black Seinfeld. So each of the four of them were a different character
That's
from
racist.
Seinfeld. By these standards, it would be considered racist. I saw the picture and thought it was hysterically funny. But it was George and Kramer and Jerry and Elaine, all four African-American people, you know, playing. One of them had the puffy shirt for Jerry. It was really funny.
And then Ohio State University Student Magazine had a flow chart this year that supports costumes that, quote, make fun of Donald Trump, but warns white students not to dress as Prince or wear traditional headwear from other cultures.
Didn't one of the dancers from, what's the dance show that everybody loves?
Dancing with the Stars?
Dancing with the Stars. I think one of the dancers on Dancing with the Stars a couple of years ago dressed as Crazy Eyes from Orange is the New Black, and everybody blasted her like crazy. And she was saying, I wasn't making fun of anybody of a different race. I was playing a character on a show.
Isn't that what you do?
It is. It's so tricky because you don't want to be insensitive, but if you're gonna do the costume, you almost have to. But you don't want it's tricky, isn't it?
I'm trying to think of the costumes when I was a little kid. I was an angel 1 year, followed by a devil, because that's what I really was.
Good balance.
I was a hobo many years.
Now, I was thinking of that earlier. That's gone by the wayside.
Wouldn't that be
it was
by
the easiest
today's standards?
Costume.
Of course it is. With a stick, with a bandana. But that was like a standard one that almost everybody was at some point. But now people would look down. Well, you're ripping on the homeless if you're wearing a hobo costume.
Although I've not seen any homeless people with a broomstick and a red bandana tied.
No, it's 100% stereotype of somebody who's down on their luck.
And my mom was really good about helping me with costumes. She would burn a cork. Mm-hmm. From a wine bottle, and as it was burned, she would rub that on my face so it looked like whiskers.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's a
good I enjoyed
look.
That. That's I was fun. A hobo many years because it was pretty easy.
That's one of the ones that you just go.
That's your go-to.
Hobo. Yeah.
Your
yeah.
go-to hobo.
Yeah.
Oh, and what are you, pretty girl?
Right. A hobo, of course.
Notre Dame Residence Hall memo that was sent out to students before a Disney-themed dance. The students were warned not to dress up as Moana, Aladdin, Pocahontas, Mulan, or the Princess and the Frog.
Oh, see, that's unfortunate. What if you're a little girl and your favorite movie is Mulan or Pocahontas? That's your favorite movie, and you dream about being that character. A little kid isn't thinking it to that level?
First of all, there's a problem with a Disney-themed college dance.
Yeah, all right. Maybe. Right? Good point.
Maybe.
And if people are going to go to that, they're going to need instruction.
Right. All right. Maybe.
All right. And here is the University of...
There was a Disney princess a couple years ago that was African-American. Do you remember? They made a big deal out of it. Every time there's a... like Mulan, they made a big deal. It's the first Asian Disney princess. And this one was a big deal because it was the first African-American Disney princess. But I don't remember who it was. But it was like at the time, it was groundbreaking.
Tiana.
Right. What was the movie? Do you know?
Well, this is a problem, isn't it?
The Princess and the Frog.
Yeah.
Thank you, Jasmine, who was named after a white Disney princess, by the way.
I don't think these things are offensive. Is it because I'm a white girl? According to this St. Thomas University, which I can't remember where it was, I told you before, if you're second-guessing that your costume may be cultural appropriation, consider these questions.
Mm-hmm.
Does my costume, A, represent a culture that is not my own?
Many times they would.
Two, include the words traditional, ethnic, cultural, or tribal.
But who would attach those words to it? You would do that yourself, right? It doesn't say it on the box, does it?
I don't think so.
I don't think it would.
Who gets a costume out of a box anymore?
I guess nobody does.
God, remember those plastic masks that were hokey and terrible?
Ben Cooper and Collegeville. Those were the
two. Of course, you're the only one that knows the brand.
I love those. I used to pour through those at Ford City.
Did you wear them?
Only a couple of times.
They were freaky.
Weren't they?
It was.
Because that elastic strap would break. That would last you 2 minutes, and then you'd have to just hold it up to your face all night.
And that was what nightmares were made of, because it was like a plastic. It's like the Burger King.
Right. With eye holes that were so small. I'm surprised any kid survived the night of Halloween.
I know, getting hit by a car because you had no peripheral vision.
Zero. You could see something if it was 100% in front of you, like a half an inch to the left,
right.
Or after that, you'd walk right into it.
And finally, does my costume perpetuate stereotypes or historical and cultural inaccuracies?
No. Well.
Everybody's taking the fun out of Halloween.
There's not going to be anything left you could be.
That's why I don't dress up.
No, all the good costumes are gone.
Are you going to try and trick or treat on the way home today?
Yeah. I am. That'll be fun.
All right, we have to take
on the
a
way
break.
Home. Look, there's Ulta, there's Charles Schwab. I'm going to go into all of those.
Oh, if Ulta would give away free lipstick, I'd be up for that.
I'd hit the corner bakery if I were you.
Oh, yes. That's a must.
Are they giving away stuff?
I think they are. There's a list in the paper today of all the different things you can get for free today.
Oh, I will look that up. We can share later.
All right, let's take a quick break. Bridget Carey's going to join us from CNET. That's coming up next. It's Bill F. Wendy Snyder on WGN.
Not only is it Halloween, it is a Tech Tuesday, and each and every Tech Tuesday we talk to CNET senior editor Bridget Carey, and today is the big day. iPhone, is it 10? Is it X? What am I supposed to call it?
We're supposed to say 10, but everyone says X because it just looks like iPhone X, you know? But yeah, it's the Roman numeral. And although you have to wait until Friday to probably see someone with it, a few reviewers, including us at CNET, have got it since yesterday. And we published our first day in the life of living with it review, and we're going to keep updating it as the week goes on.
And that you can find CNET.com and just search for the live iPhone X review or iPhone 10 review.
Yeah, exactly. And, when you only have a few hours with it, you kind of get these first impressions of, how does it work with that face unlocking technology? And there's a pretty funny video of our reviewer. He had a beard, and he shaved multiple ways and also put all kinds of glasses on. And it being Halloween, we had easy, ample access to all sorts of wigs and stuff. And he was able to stump it by just putting, a swim cap on. It wouldn't let him in.
That's a problem.
A problem for swimmers, maybe. but it was okay with him having a crazy, mustache and clean shaven, and he cut his hair. But then when he puts a costume mustache on, it didn't work. But he put a costume beard back on, and it did work. So So it's showing you that even with some crazy glasses, it's trying to be okay if you did get a new pair of glasses, if you did get a new haircut, if you went suddenly clean shaven. But if you have some crazy, you know, welder's glasses, no. If you have a scarf that's covering half of your mouth because it's freezing outside, no, obviously it's not going to work. It needs to see your mouth. So that kind of test you can kind of see for yourself, and we're going to do some things like that. People say, oh, if you have a twin, it's going to get fooled. Well, of course, you know, there's a little bit of a duh moment there. But I think it's more interesting to see when you change your outfit or, like, what you're going to have to do personally every day to, you know, be annoyed or not annoyed to make it work.
Bridget, there's a backup, though, to get in, right? You can put in a couple-digit code or something if the face recognition isn't working properly, right?
Yeah, just like now with the fingerprint scanner. You just put in your number code if you, you know, don't want to use the facial scanner. You don't have to use it.
Exactly. Yeah. Okay.
All right, now the screen is supposed to be very impressive because it kind of curves around the outside. Isn't this the biggest iPhone screen to date?
Well, actually, it's a little bit smaller than that iPhone 8 Plus. It's a little bit like a Goldilocks situation. You have the 8, and then the 8 Plus, and right in the middle of those two sizes is where the 10 lies. So there isn't any two choices. It's only one choice of size for this 10 model, but there's no home button, so a lot of it is screen. There's a little notch on the top where all the camera sensors are to detect your face. Some people groan about how it has this black notch that's coming down. It's interrupting the full screen effect. But there are times where you can make it so, I guess, it doesn't look like a cutout, and it kind of just is a rectangle and kind of puts black bars on both sides of the phone.
What about the apps that you've downloaded on previous phones? Will they work on the iPhone X?
Yeah, this is just a different look to it. So it's the same. It's the same deal as upgrading any phone any other time in that regard.
Is the camera really that much better?
You know, we're still kind of playing around with it. You can do some interesting effects with, you know, kind of cutting people out and profile shots.
Which is good, you know, if you get a divorce.
Right.
You can, you know, remember in the old days you'd go through photo.
Like cutting people out of the background. But, yeah, I know what you're saying. Anyways, no, and that comes down to software more than anything. You know, that they're really putting more of a focus on the front camera, the front facial recognition thing, because what they can do is, if you're into Snapchat and other fun augmented reality things, they can really track your face to do cool effects and those animated emojis. This is the one phone you get to do those, to have your face be the talking smiley face, or if you are so inclined, be the talking little pile of poo, which is what our reviewer did. You know, you can see it there. So it's tracking how your mouth is moving, how your eyes are moving, and kind of matching that with an animation so you can send it to your friends and look like you're a talking 3D object.
Our Apple.
I am a talking 3D object.
Yes,
I don't have to
you
pretend.
Are.
I am.
The Apple Store opened right behind us on Pioneer Court, and it looks like a laptop computer. It looks like a MacBook, and it's all glass. And I was just reading in the paper that they have to turn the lights off inside of it because birds are running into
it,
thinking they can fly through.
Oh.
So that's a problem. And speaking of breaking glass, is this screen that's covering the whole front of it going to be more breakable, or when you put a case on it, is it going to kind of obstruct this cool screen?
Yeah, that's kind of the problem when they're selling a phone that, look how great the glass is, but it just means there's more glass on the front and back. There's more ways it could break, and I'm a clumsy fool. I drop my phone all the time, so I would put a case on it, and then you want to make sure that case, is it too thick? If it's a super super thick case, maybe it'll affect the wireless charging. Maybe it won't. This is the kind of situation where I like to, you know, definitely see how people are going to test this, and we're going to test cases and things like that. I don't know if a reviewer is so apt to want to drop it today. It's only day two, but we are going to probably do a drop test too when the phone comes out. So we'll probably buy one just to see how easy it is to break.
Has it sold out? I mean, everybody's crazy about this, huh?
What the thing is that it looks like supply is low. So people who are fans, yes, are crazy to get it, but does that mean that they're any more crazy than usual? That's to be seen, because this whole facial recognition system, it looks like supply might be low, taking Apple longer to make each one. Pre-orders sold out in 10 minutes for some models. If you are going to stand in line on Friday, it sounds like you may have to settle for maybe a different memory. Maybe you have to upgrade to the more expensive memory. This is a $1,000 phone. It's already expensive. So if you want to get more memory, you're going to pay another $100, $200 for all the accessories and stuff if you upgrade. Or maybe you won't get the color you want. But right now, for pre-orders, if you just want to order online and you don't care about getting it on Friday, it's going to be delivered mid-December.
I don't care. I just hope it makes the other iPhones cheaper because I might need a new one of those.
That it will do, probably.
That's going to happen. Yeah, that's definitely going to happen. And then we also know, Bridget, that Facebook is going to talk to Congress today about Russia's involvement in their website. What do you expect will happen there?
Yeah, this week is going to be interesting because you have testimony today and also tomorrow and different kinds of committees going on. There's been a leak on what Facebook's preparing to say, and they're preparing to say that 126 million Americans saw Russia-backed posts over the past 2 years in their Facebook feed.
Hmm.
It's what does that mean exactly? Could you please explain this to me?
It means that...
Here, can I explain it to Wendy? I noticed that a lot of my friends that used to send me pictures of mac and cheese started sending me pictures of borscht, and I said to myself, something's not right. Something's going on here, and I don't know what it is.
Okay. So they're coming from Russia, or Facebook users are supporters of Russia?
Coming from Russia, they were masquerading as American-based groups. You know how, like, you might say, like, who made this video? And it's some strange group name that you just don't think twice about it. Some Russia groups were making posts and pictures and memes for Black Lives Matter, but the payments and the creation of it were all coming out of Russia locations. Why would they do that? Why would they care about doing that? Why would they make anti-Hillary memes or whatever the case may be? Because they're trying to stir up trouble and make us fight amongst ourselves. So there have been some proof things where there were memes and even Pokemon Go was being used. Like, hey, everyone, you know, stirring up emotions, essentially, you could say, and kind of you know, becoming talking points, even if they weren't, you know, they probably didn't care. They're not in America, but, like, why would someone in Russia make a Black Lives Matter thing? It's all part of this manipulation. So we're going to have to hear over the next couple of days maybe some other examples of what they were actually sending, you know, why they were pro-Trump this and anti-this, whatever it may be. Why was it coming from there? How much of it was being seen in your feed? And some of it was paid for, like advertisements. So when they pay, they can get it into more eyeballs. And I think as the days go by, we're going to see this how big of a scope this is.
Only 3 more weeks till Yakov Smirnov's birthday, Wendy. Are you excited? I'm going to send him a nice card.
Good for you.
Bridget, what are you dressing your daughter as for Halloween?
She is a little lion, the 1.5-year-old, and we are the zookeepers who let her escape.
That's beautiful. That's going to be fun.
Well, happy Halloween.
Thank you.
That's Bridget Carey from CNET. Visit them online at CNET.com. We'll take a quick break, and then we'll talk about the scariest, most haunted places in Chicago right after the news. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Thank you, Steve. Are you scared? Are you spooky scary? Are you a scared? Is that what you say, Bill?
Scared, yeah. Little kids say that, so I say it too.
You know, I was not here last year on Halloween because I had knee surgery.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know why I wasn't here the year before, so I've never met our next guest who...
Ursula Bielski is the founder of Chicago Hauntings, Inc., the website chicagohauntings.com. And Ursula, you even said to me last year when you were here, am I ever going to meet Wendy every year when I come in? She's mysteriously absent. And now this year you can't come in.
I know.
What's with this?
We're the same person. That's what it is.
Crazy.
Well, Ursula, nice to meet you and talk to you. We'll have to work it out in person one of these Halloweens. I was just telling Bill, I think it was yesterday or the day before, a lot of people were posting things on their Facebook pages saying that there were a line of cars going through Bachelor's Grove Cemetery.
Oh, my gosh.
So that's, people have been waiting all weekend and going through it. What is, you've been there, Bill?
Many times. Yeah, I grew up about 15 minutes away from there.
And what are we supposed to see there?
Bachelor's Grove is known as not just one of the most haunted places in Chicago, not just one of the most haunted cemeteries in the world, but one of the most haunted places in the world. And Saturday night, it was a very weird, very rare event where the Forest Reserve District, which usually works very hard to keep people out of Bachelor's Grove at night, actually invited people to come in for not only ghost stories, but a ghost hunt. So there were, I mean, I expected there to be hundreds of people there. There were thousands of people there. Thousands.
Do we all believe in ghosts? Is that what it is? Or is it just, it's kind of cool to say you were there? I mean, do that many people believe in the spirits out there?
You know, I think Bachelor's Grove is a place that lures so many people that do and so many people that don't, because I think people are still, even if they don't, I think they're, most people have their mind open where they are still thinking, maybe I'm going to find that place that convinces me that it's real. And Bachelor's Grove could be that place, because there have been so many different kinds of phenomena experienced there going back to at least the 1930s. Including a vanishing house, vanishing cars, a woman in white, ghost lights, ghost dogs, time loops where people disappear for days at a time.
What?
And then come out and don't even know that they've been gone. A lot of people getting disoriented out in the woods around the cemetery. So it's a very fascinating place for many people, and there are so many people that travel there from all over the world to get a look at it for themselves.
Do you have to just go on Halloween weekend, or can I sneak in sometime and see it when there are not thousands of people there?
Well, you can go there anytime. Bachelor's Grove Cemetery is surrounded by the Forest Reserve of Cook County. It's at 143rd Street and Ridgeland, and it's part of the Rubio Woods Forest Preserve. So you can park across the street and very carefully cross the New Midlothian Turnpike, which is also 143rd Street, and walk through that old Indian trail through the woods past the cemetery. But the cemetery is only open, just like the Forest Reserve, from sunrise to sunset every day of the year. So make sure you're out at sunset, and especially make sure you have your car out of the parking lot at sunset, or they will lock you in and out.
Ursula, two questions. Question one, the obvious, what do ghost dogs eat? And then question number two is, what could have possibly have happened there that would make this the epicenter of ghost activity? What is your theory as to how this all began over there at Bachelor's Grove?
I do not know what ghost dogs eat. I'm assuming they eat Count Chocula or
sure.
Blueberry.
Yeah. Oh, blueberry. Yeah. Now we're talking.
Yeah. But, of course, you can only get that October now. So I don't know what they eat the rest of the year. But, what was the second question?
The second question is,
my joke.
What would have started there that created all this ghostly activity, do you think?
There are a lot of different theories about that. One is the fact that there's so much desecration of the tombstones. This was originally a settler cemetery that was established around the time of the Black Hawk War, 1832. These are the times of the first land sales in Illinois, too, a couple years later. So this was originally a settler cemetery, and there was a robust community of farmers in that area until the latter part of the 19th century. So these are the graves of settlers and pioneers that have been desecrated over the years. And even though we think there are about 200 people still buried at Bachelor's Grove, there are fewer than two dozen tombstones that still remain. Most of them have been stolen or destroyed over the years. So that's a big part of it.
So the dead people would be mad, right? They'd be furious that people came and destroyed their graves. So they haunt
sure,
us,
absolutely.
The farmers. We are farmers. Boo.
Yes. Yes. There's also a thought among investigators, though, that even though the cemetery might be haunted by some of these people, that there is another presence in the woods around the cemetery, and that this is a malevolent presence, and that has possibly come from ritual activity that's gone on over the years, which started, of course, after the talk of the cemetery being haunted. So that seems to be a completely different presence that's there in the woods.
Wouldn't you think that most every cemetery would have some ghost sightings or hauntings? Because, you know, no one really wants to die. I'm thinking of the Woodlawn Cemetery is that North Riverside? Right. There was a circus train accident, and a lot of unidentified circus performers were buried in that cemetery. And if you look at the gravestones, there are like little elephants there.
Yeah.
So, I mean, aren't there a lot of unhappy people that, you know, people aren't dying to get in? Wouldn't there be a lot of hauntings right. in almost every cemetery?
Well, that's one of the most interesting things I think about paranormal investigation is that we do have these discrepancies where you would think that every cemetery would have hauntings, but they don't. So why do some have them and some don't? And we think it's a combination of not only all of the dead, of course, who are interred at these locations, many who probably are unhappy, have unfinished business here, but that there's also some kind of quality about the land itself at different locations, which allows the dead or these entities or energies to interact with us. A good example of this are all of the cemeteries along Archer Avenue in the southwest suburbs. Archer is known as one of the most haunted roads in the world, and there are six cemeteries along Archer Avenue, and all of them are haunted. And we think that this has a lot to do with the road itself. It was an ancient Indian road, so it was an Indian trail that was used for probably thousands of years. It also witnessed a lot of death and suffering during the building of the Illinois and Michigan Canal in the mid-19th century, which was built along that ancient road. These are a lot of Irish-American immigrants who died under really slave-like conditions, and many of them were buried along that road. So we think there's a lot of preternatural kind of power or energy along this road, which allows those who are buried at the cemeteries in the area to interact with us more than perhaps at other places.
Ursula, in movies and in books, a lot of the times what you see is these spirits come back because they have unfinished business. Is it like that right. in real life too? Is it unfinished business?
There are a lot of different reasons, and that's a main one. A main one, when people die and they have animosity between themselves and someone else, or they have some, maybe they run a business or they run an institution and they left things unfinished that they feel that they're, the next person can't handle properly, can't do properly. That is one of the reasons that psychic mediums tell us that spirits remain with us.
I always have a to-do list that I never get finished because I have ADHD.
No,
so I am going to come back for sure.
You're definitely coming back.
To finish that that list.
Wendy's coming back. We're all coming back. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Put a spell on you. Cause you're mine.
Ursula Bielski on the line with us. And you, my friend, you host some haunted tours throughout Chicagoland. Tell us about some of them.
We do. We are in business now for 15 years with Chicago Hauntings Tours. And, yeah, we have expanded to do so many different kinds of tours. Our classic is the Chicago Hauntings Tour, which is a 2.5-hour bus tour that departs from the fabled Congress Plaza Hotel on Michigan Avenue, which was recently named as the most haunted place in Illinois, as a matter of fact. In addition to this, we also do Devil in the White City tours. We started these tours about 14 years ago, and these are led by my business partner, David Cowan, who is a journalist and an author. He wrote the book about the Our Lady of Angels Fire in Chicago, and he is this walking encyclopedia of Chicago knowledge, and he does this amazing Devil in the White City tour, taking people to the site of the murder castle in Englewood, site of the World's Fairgrounds, the Midway, and so on. And we do these about 2-3 times a month. And then we also do all-day ghost adventures, which take people for 7 or 8 hours in a particular region, either Chicago or Lake County or the Archer Avenue Triangle. And then we use ghost hunting tools at some of the more actively haunted locations. And this includes lunch, and people can BYOB on the bus.
I want to bring my own ghost. And, can I do that?
Yeah. You can probably bring one home.
Do you ever find anything with these ghost busting tools?
We do. You know, there's the most researchers believe that what we call ghosts or paranormal presences or energies are made up of electricity. And so oftentimes they will register on different kinds of equipment, just like we do, you know, when we're alive. So, yeah, it's interesting. There's a lot of different tools that people use. When I was starting out like 30 years ago, it was like very rudimentary things. But now there are many people who actually invent equipment just for paranormal investigation. Probably the most famous person is a guy named Bill Chappell, who invents all the equipment that is used on the television program Ghost Adventures. And he invents a lot of equipment that's specifically designed for ghosts to actually talk with us in real time, such as a device called the Ovilus, which actually has a 2,000-word dictionary in it, which the theory is that spirits can manipulate the EM field to use these words to talk with us in real time and give us answers to our questions. So there is a lot of interesting equipment that's used today, and a lot of investigators do get some very interesting results. Whether you're willing to accept that it's communication from the dead is another story, but there are some interesting results.
Are the dead texting yet?
They are. Oh,
they
my
are
gosh.
Texting?
This is crazy. I can't believe you asked me this, because I had this one of the strangest experiences of my career last week at Lincoln Park Zoo, where we do the zoo ghost tours. We've done these for about 5 years. And each year, in addition to the walking tours of the zoo, which of course is built on the old city cemetery, very haunted, we always do a lecture one of the Thursdays at Cafe Brower. And I give a lecture about the zoo and Chicago hauntings. And then the investigators that work with me there at the zoo come up and talk about the things that we've experienced at the investigations. And as part of the one last Thursday, we had volunteers from the audience come up and use dowsing rods, which is one of the tools that paranormal investigators use to try and communicate with the dead. Well, this young woman came up and as a volunteer, and she used them, and the rods will cross and uncross to answer questions that we ask. And she was having these very active responses from the rods. Well, she sat down, and I had been recording for EVP, or electronic voice phenomena, the voices of the dead, during the session. And I got this harsh whisper of a woman saying, "Jenny," right at the beginning when we were asking if anyone that this girl knew was there. And she came up afterwards and she said that this was the voice of and the name of her cousin who had been murdered several years ago. So she asked me if I could send her the audio file that I had recorded. And I said, of course. So I had opened up my phone to send her an email, and I attached the file, and something took over the keyboard of my cell phone and was typing furiously an email to this woman. And it was over and over, I okay.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
This woman had asked the medium who works with us at the zoo, "Is she okay? Is this woman okay that I'm talking to?" And my friend assured her, she's okay. So she had actually asked if her friend or her cousin was okay. And she seemed to be. It was crazy. It went on for minutes. And several people saw my phone pad and heard. You could hear, you know how you hear the phone clicking the letters? You could hear it doing it as it did. It was amazing. Absolutely amazing.
Okay. I am such a believer in this. And you do these tours year round, right? It's not just on Halloween.
We do. We do them all year round. We do them almost every night from the summer through Thanksgiving, and then the weekends and special events during the winter and spring.
Ursula, go on.
No, I just want to know the website, because I've got to do this.
You guys have to come. That would be so fantastic.
Bill will do stuff just to scare me, though, yes. So I can't go with you.
I would
That's
do
it. True. That's
I would
true.
Do it. ChicagoHauntings.com, though, right, Ursula? That's the website?
ChicagoHauntings.com, yeah.
A texter says, please ask Ursula to talk about St. Rita's Parish and the monks on All Saints Day. Do you know what that's making reference to?
this is such a famous Chicago ghost story. This story became so famous because it happened in the parish of the late great ghost hunter Richard Crow, who passed away a few years ago. This is at St. Rita's Parish on the south side, and it was on All Saints Day, and it was witnessed by dozens of people, apparently, that had gathered in the church for a prayer service. Of course, this is a holy day in the Catholic Church. And during the service, something apparently took over the organ and started playing this weird music on the organ in the choir loft. And when everyone looked up to the choir loft, they saw these six hooded figures, three of them dressed in white and three dressed in red robes. And they actually glided down from the choir loft and walked through the church. And the people gathered there heard these figures say, "Pray for us," which, of course, we do in the Catholic Church on All Saints' Days for all the souls in purgatory, which we believe people are kept in purgatory until they have enough prayers from the living to go to heaven. The doors were apparently locked from the inside. Like, people tried to run out of the church. They were so scared and they couldn't get out of the doors. And then this wind came up through the church and the doors were blown open and everyone laughed. But this was, this is very unusual, of course, because it was experienced by so many people at one time, which is very unusual for a paranormal event. And this story is still told, all over the city, especially at this time of the year and before the anniversary.
Wendy's under the desk, by the way,
no,
right now.
I cannot explain it, but I am like tearing up. I don't know why. This is just fascinating to me.
It is, and it's very moving. I cry on almost every tour that I give, and I've given thousands of them, because it is. It's wondrous, you know? It's miraculous, and it's wondrous, and it's what we are all searching for every day of our lives is, some proof that we're still connected to the people that we've loved and that someday we'll still see them again. And so it's very moving.
I am, like, totally tearing up here. Mm-hmm. I've got to do one of these, and I am at ChicagoHauntings.com right now. Are you a medium? I'm more of a large, but are you a medium?
I'm extra large, but I am not a medium. No, I have something of the empath about me where I sometimes go into places and I can feel, you know, like when you walk into a room and you know that the people that were in the room before you were fighting.
Yeah.
It's like that, you know, an empath can pick up on those things, emotions that were left behind in the past. So I have something of that, which my older daughter also has.
How about that?
But I am not a medium. I'm not able to see or communicate with the dead. I do have, interestingly, some clairaudience, which is the ability to hear people talking sometimes. And this is something that's really escalated since I've really begun to work in EVP research, which is where I've actively been trying to record the voices of the dead. It seems the more I do it, I've actually developed the ability to, you know, audibly hear sometimes voices that are out there. So
I heard something in my house, and I've mentioned this before. The kids were, I'm not sure if Dylan was born, but Michael was definitely at an age where he wasn't talking yet. And I had fallen asleep, and I was awakened to just this mom, like a whispery mom.
Yeah.
And I woke up, and the first thing was, you know, I checked on the kids, everything was fine. And then I'm thinking he couldn't have called me because he doesn't talk yet. So I don't know. Is that a spirit?
That's incredible. That's a very normal occurrence for mothers to hear their children's voices calling them. That's very fascinating that this was before he spoke. But, apparently even the people that are able to speak are communicating telepathically or psychically. So it's very possible that he was communicating with you psychically. Maybe he was having a bad dream or something like that.
Pretty wild.
Where he was kind of psychically calling out to you. Yeah. Oh, that's really
cool. He doesn't have a real deep, breathy voice like that, does he? Or does he? Maybe
no,
he does.
But it was, no. Certainly, he's got a really low voice, in fact. But he
Not
wasn't.
As a baby.
Right? Yes, he was. And,
hi, Mom.
I'm hungry, Mom. Ursula, it's always fun to talk to you.
Yes, I've got
year
to meet you.
In studio, Ursula Bielski is the founder of Chicago Hauntings, Inc. What you want to do is visit their website at chicagohauntings.com and get scared. Thanks so much, Ursula. Have a great Halloween.
Thanks. To you too. Love you guys. Thank you.
Care.
We'll take a quick break, then some news, and then our friend Sven Gulli comes by.
That is scary.
That's scary. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
They did the mash. They did the monster mash.
The monster mash.
It was a graveyard smash.
They did the mash.
It caught on in a flash.
They did the mash.
Hey, Jazzy, we need some headphones for the very attractive Sven. I like my men with long hair. You know that.
Oh. Sven Gulli is here, the legendary Sven Gulli. And I must tell you, right as the show is starting, I'm sure you're aware of Doc Emrick, the greatest hockey announcer of all time.
Of course, yeah.
So during the crosstalk, we said that you were stopping by, and Doc, within seconds, texted me, "I can't wait. I love Sven Gulli."
Seriously?
Yes, yes.
Oh, that's so cool. I always thought it was so nice that he would throw in when he was doing the hockey games.
Yes.
You know, mentions of me.
Yes.
One of my friends actually, you know, managed to record it once, and he says, "You're not going to believe this." During the game, Doc Emrick says something about you.
Yeah,
frequently.
You
know,
that Chicago is the town of Sven Gulli.
Yes.
And I hear it, and it's like, that is so cool. Yeah. That's so nice of him.
To be recognized by one of the best of all, one of the best being recognized by one of the best. What's wrong with that?
Do you play hockey at all, Sven?
I never did. I was never coordinated enough to do any sports for the most part. In my hands, you know, I was the guy that was like, yeah, we'll pick him. What are you still doing there? So that was the way that it worked.
For people who don't know, tell the story of how Sven Gulli came to be.
The original Sven Gulli?
Well, the original and then the transition into...
And the son of, and
yeah,
then...
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, my mentor, who was on radio and TV here in Chicago, Jerry G. Bishop, mm-hmm. happened to be the announcer who was on the, he's a staff announcer, and he was on duty on the Friday nights when they were running
duty.
That was a different guy.
Oh, okay.
Wendy's on duty right now.
Well, let's not bring that up. And when he was doing the announcements going in and out of the movie, he started to just, you know, like start doing this voice and making jokes.
Yeah.
And, you know, as he called it, it was like Bela Lugosi crossed with his Jewish uncle. That was what the accent was. And eventually people, you know, were tuning in to hear his jokes and things. And he asked people to send in jokes, which is what I started doing.
Yeah.
And eventually it was
so
popular.
You were at Northwestern at the time?
I was at Northwestern at the time,
at Northwestern.
Running out of money.
Yeah.
And they decided to make it a full-fledged show with him on the air, you know, in video segments.
Yeah.
And he knew that I was a student that was at Northwestern. He said, "Why don't you come and watch us tape sometime?" So I did. And he would give me specific assignments of things he was hoping for me to write.
Mm-hmm.
And I ended up working with him there and then on radio on WMAQ.
Now, in those early days, it was called Screaming Yellow Theater, right?
Yes, it was.
Right, and you never actually saw Sven Gulli. You would just hear his voice, right?
Yeah, at first it was one single frame that I think it looked like either a woman screaming or something.
Yeah.
And then eventually they took pictures of him in a costume, and they would just rotate these awful slides of him.
And Screaming Yellow Theater got its name, for people who don't know, because there was a snack treat out called Screaming Yellow Zombers.
Exactly. Yeah.
They were delicious.
So good.
Yeah. When did they stop making those? It has to be, 30 years?
Probably around that. Yeah, 20, 30 years ago.
And they're still fresh.
How does that happen?
I don't know.
How does that happen? So at some point they made the decision, instead of it just being a picture with his voice, he would physically be on, but it wasn't regular motion on camera, right? It was like still photographs.
They shot a bunch of slides of him, just, you know, close up, further away, holding up something, and they would just rotate those, which really had nothing to do with whatever he was talking about, and eventually became a show on videotape, and they would insert the same way that my bits are in there, and was after the show was off that he was approached by one of his friends in the TV industry here about, for the summer, would you just want to do Sven Gulli again just for a kick? And he was like, well, you know, I don't want to do it. And the reason he gave at the time was because he hoped to maybe run for office someday.
Oh, really?
And he didn't want it to be brought forth that, you know, this man, my opponent, used to dress like this and hold rubber chickens.
I'd vote for him just for that. That's a good reason to vote for him.
Now, at the same time as this was happening in other parts of the country, similar things were happening, right? There were other scary hosts on television.
Sure, yeah, yeah. This always works in cycles, it seems like. There's a bunch of them around, then it all goes away, and then it comes back. Mm-hmm. And I guess I've defied that cycle by being around. But then at that time, when he didn't want to do it, he actually said to me, I think you should do it because you could pull it off and, you know, I'll just produce and help you write it. And you could be the son of Svengoolie. He decided I should be the son of Svengoolie, which was a great compliment to me.
Did you say yes right away?
Yeah.
You did. Good.
and we had some false starts and nothing ever really came of it. So then later on when Jerry got the chance to go to San Diego, he was leaving town. He said, so what are you going to do? Because I'd been just freelancing, and other people I'd been working with, like Dick Orkin, had gone to the West Coast. And it's a hell of a commute, so I wasn't going to be doing that. And I said, well, maybe I'll try to sell somebody locally on you know, a TV show or something. He said, I tell you what, if you want, I give you permission to do that Son of Svengoolie thing.
Yeah.
And so eventually, I finally sold someone on it, and I did.
Was that a tough sell? I don't know why it would be, but I guess it must have been.
I called several stations. Some were very polite and said, no, we're really not interested. One station I called, the program director laughed at me and hung up. And when I talked to WFLD, I actually got an appointment and went in. I thought, this is it. Went in, presented them the whole concept and everything.
Were you dressed?
I'm sorry?
Were you dressed?
No.
Oh, okay.
But I did have a picture.
Okay. Oh, you did? That's good.
And they said, this is a great idea. This is really good. We've been thinking of doing something like this, so we're going to throw it open to anybody who wants to do it. And I said, well, I've just brought you a whole concept and everything. And they said, well, we'll let everybody do whatever they want to do, and we'll see what happens there.
What do you think their thought process was with that exactly?
Probably because they didn't know me and they didn't care.
Yeah.
So, no, maybe. Which went on into when I was actually on the air there. But, so there were a bunch of different auditions and such. And eventually it went back and forth. And finally they decided that they wanted me to do it.
It was you.
Yeah.
I can't imagine anyone else doing it.
Me neither.
Oh, well, but if it had been somebody else doing a different character or something, you're sure. You would have seen him and you would have thought, my goodness, that's entertainment.
But who in Chicago, other than Jim Ruddle, I guess is the name who comes to mind immediately, he would have been a great Svengoolie. I don't know who else could have done this.
Well, but see, they wouldn't have been Svengoolie. They would have been a different character, or themselves or whatever.
Not the same. Was it a rivalry? Was it a friendly rivalry between your show and Creature Features on Channel 9, they were similar, but they were different.
They were. Well, Creature Features, for quite a while, had the better movies, the Universal stuff that I have now.
Right.
And it was not really hosted other than, you know, Carl Grayson at the beginning of it, you know, reciting the poem or whatever.
Yeah.
It wasn't, and because we were on at different times, too, that it wasn't really competition.
And Screaming Eel Theater and then Svengoolie, that was, for the most part, a Friday night show. And then it was Saturday nights, wasn't it?
I did Saturday
Creature
nights.
Features.
And then we were on Saturday nights but we were on earlier.
Yeah.
And then they switched it down to afternoons.
Yeah. Is that better for you or not as good for you?
It was different, The afternoons were not bad, but then when they moved to 10 in the morning for a short time, that was
bad. I remember that.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
Although with the way people record things nowadays,
you know,
you can record it and watch it when you want to, which helps.
But see, let me explain to you. You know, they just moved my time now here around Chicago. We're on at 7. Used to be on at 9.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the same kind of move all over the country. I've gotten so many people like, this is terrible. The reason for movies like this is to watch them after dark.
Mm-hmm.
And I've told them, good, wait 2 months, you'll be watching in the dark. But for the most part, it's been real well accepted, and our ratings have been real good, and
excellent.
It's worked out fine.
You deserve that. You
well,
do.
I don't know about that.
You do.
How long have you been doing this?
I started in 1979.
Good golly.
Yes.
But what does that say, that you've been doing this since 1979? You must be doing it right, or you wouldn't be able to say anything like that.
I guess so, yeah. I always get the little things like, you know, well, Sammy Terry was better. And, you know, it's, I was like, okay, great.
Yeah.
But, you know, is he around now? No, I don't think
Have you met the other horror hosts? Have you met Elvira or Zachary or any of the other people who have done this?
I've met a handful. I have met Elvira. She's been very sweet and very supportive of what I do. She's said on like, national radio shows how she really likes what I do, which
nice.
Is cool. Zachary I never got to meet, but we had communicated through other people.
Yeah.
And he was a fan of what I did, and he used to refer to me as Grand Old Sven Gulli.
A term of endearment. Good.
There's a guy who's on the internet who used to be on in the Washington area, Dick Dizel,
yeah.
who is Count Gore Vidal. Or, no, Gore Duvall.
Right.
So, yeah.
A play on
and,
Gore Vidal.
I talked to him, real nice guy, and he was, you know, one of those early guys in the 70s.
Yeah.
He was doing it.
And what do you make of SCTV for years had Count Floyd, who is kind of a parody of everybody we've just mentioned. What do you
exactly.
think of Count Floyd?
I love Count Floyd. I always thought Joe Flaherty was so funny.
Yeah.
And I certainly, you know, could feel that. You know, the movie this week is, you know, something like, you know, some Ingmar Bergman movie.
Right.
And, who booked that? And I used to get plenty of those along the way, believe me. When I was at WFLD, the program director would bring this little tray with Post-it notes with the names of things, like he was presenting gold to me. And some of them were absolutely terrible and not even right for the show. And,
yeah.
you know, and I'd look at him and I'd say, this is a terrible movie. I don't want to run it. He'd go, but it's color.
That's all you need.
Okay, good.
Good.
That's a good theory.
Rich Coase is here and Sven Gulli are here. A coincidence? Maybe. if you want to talk to either of them or both of them, we're 312-981-7200. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. It's Bill Leff, it's Wendy Snyder, and Rich Coase. Sven Gulli are here. Rich, tell me this.
Yes.
What goes on in that moment when you're watching a scary movie and you don't want to be scared, but you love being scared at the exact same time? What is the psychology behind that, do you think?
I've always said that the psychology is the same as like going on a roller coaster. It's like you know you're going to be scared,
yep.
but you also know that basically it's going to be safe for the most part.
Yeah.
And that once it's over with, you're going to be fine. You're not hurt or anything.
Yeah.
But there is that initial thrill and, you know, the adrenaline from being scared.
Sure.
And I think that it's the same sort of thing. A roller coaster almost is the same type of entertainment.
And don't we have this ability in our brains to lock those moments in, those moments in films that have scared us? Will never, ever go away. They'll always be there, won't they?
Oh, sure. Yeah. I mean, you probably remember. I remember the very first movie that really scared me, and I think we might have talked about this before, is The Wizard of Oz.
Yeah.
That the witch absolutely terrified me. You can have your flying monkeys or anything else that scares you in it. That witch absolutely scared me so badly that I wouldn't even look at the screen. And her voice, I think, was part of it, too.
Yeah.
She was just so
She was really scary.
Frightening. Yeah.
Yeah.
yeah. yeah. And I will never forget that.
Do you remember yours, Wendy?
My first...
The first time in a movie that you just went, this is too scary to even look at.
I can't remember those moments.
I think mine was, we would go to the drive-in every mm-hmm. Sunday, my family would and I would, and the coming attractions for Planet of the Apes,
oh.
and the mere fact that those apes were talking, that's all I needed to see. I
just, sure, it was so very bizarre.
Yeah.
And there were a couple of real good scare moments in that movie,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, yeah.
I remember that real well. The other movie that I remember very early on having something that scared me was the original King Kong.
Mm.
There was stuff in that. It was like, you know, oh my gosh, he's picking these people up and eating them.
Right.
Right.
And
really
do you know the backstory? There are scenes from King Kong that happen on the island with giant insects, giant ants that they
oh,
said
right,
were so
yeah.
scary they had to take out because nothing that happened later on in the movie was quite as scary as those early scenes.
Yeah,
so
I think there also was a giant spider.
There was.
And that yeah. was one of the things they cut as well.
Yeah.
And
the
I would
giant
love
things
to see that
are scary. I remember them, the
sure.
giant
oh,
ants.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
this Saturday night we have the deadly mantis. A giant mantis. And usually you're not thinking, you know, mantises, they're busy praying, they're very holy. But they're not going to bother you, are they? And yet this one does.
Yeah, they seem to find a way, don't they?
I
they
didn't
do.
Like scary movies that much when I was little.
You didn't?
I really didn't.
But
no.
that was the beauty of your show is you could be scared and laugh along with it, and that was such a perfect combination.
I was,
you know?
I'm the safety valve, the
yeah.
comic relief, that it's like, you know, okay, let's calm down. It's all right. You know,
yeah.
I'm right here with you.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's exactly what
You're like
what
our
I
therapist.
With.
Oh, it works well.
Boy, are you going to be screwed up.
Who do you think is the best at figuring out the best way to scare us in terms of, I mean, I know Stephen King is always called in literature, he's the best. But in movies, who do you think is the best at knowing exactly what to do to scare us?
Oh, wow. That's so hard to say. I mean, you've seen a lot of the stuff that comes with the Walking Dead.
Oh, yeah.
And a lot of that is scary, but it's almost like you get used to it now.
The walkers don't bother. I mean, they're getting grosser in the way that they're killed, but it's just they're an aside. I don't even care about them anymore.
Sure.
What's really scary are the survivors, the people there.
And, you know, Negan.
Oh,
you know, here's a human.
He's a great villain.
Not a zombie or a walking dead person.
Yeah.
He's just bad and evil.
All right. In our lifetime, Rich, we've seen a change. Like there were the classic universal monsters that we talked about earlier, Frankenstein, Dracula, Wolfman, Mummy. And then it became kind of a slashery based film that would scare people. What do you think will be in 10 or 15 or 20 years? Will it revert back to what it used to be, or will it get more gruesome? What do you think will happen?
Well, it's hard to say. I think it's going to level off and stay at a gruesome level, quite honestly. And I think that there will be people who will kind of do retro type things, going back to like the 40s and 50s type movies. The big thing with them, I always bring this up, is the atmosphere they created. Those black and white films and the lighting and the shadow really, really conveyed such a feeling. And that was part of what scared you, too.
Yep.
The way that things looked. And I think that there are still people who are capable of doing that. And I think, you know, that's going to show up every so often. But I think we're too locked into the whole, you know, gore and, hey, look, here's your intestines type stuff.
Right.
That Night of the Living Dead, the original, that might have been my first really, like, I'm so afraid because this could happen.
And that was also one of the first ones that was so incredibly brutal as far as, you know, seeing intestines and people getting bitten and torn apart. That probably was.
And the slow-moving zombies scare me more.
Than the fast-moving
zombies?
Yeah,
I don't know why.
Because
you do, you'd think, I have time to get away from these zombies, but they always got you.
Yeah,
and yet, you know, it's always, you know, you go around the corner where you think you're going to be safe, and here comes another whole horde of them coming at you.
And there's also the element of somebody who was once my friend and my ally has now become the enemy. So that adds to the friction.
One of them, it just adds more, you know, angst to the whole thing.
Yeah.
You know, here's somebody that you cared about, and the only way to finally put them at peace would be to, you know, shove an ice pick through their brain.
Yes.
And that, you know, are we capable of doing that? I don't think
That's
so.
That's a good question.
Do zombies get revenge? Like, if all of a sudden you got killed and turned into a zombie, would you go after all the people that bothered you?
I think you just go out. Isn't the
just
rule,
anyone?
It's, you're just hungry,
if you
right?
smell brains?
Yeah, I think it's, yeah, exactly. You're just hungry, more or less, and you don't care who you're going after. It's not like you're going, okay, let me make up a list. I'm going to go bite him because I didn't like him.
Right.
That's like the old joke when the doctor tells the guy, I'm sorry, but you have rabies, and the guy takes out a piece of paper and a pencil and starts writing it down. He says, oh, you're writing a will? He says, no, I'm making a list of who I want to bite. Hey, Rob, here's another joke.
Thank you, buddy. Sorrell. That's Svengoolie and it's Rich Coase. It's both. How can it be? It's a mystery. That's how it can be. Always fun to talk to you. Always fun to watch you. What should people know? I know the show is, as we mentioned, on at a different time. So that's now.
We're on Saturday nights, 7 o'clock Central Time. Or you can catch the rerun the next week on Saturday at 11 a.m. on WCIU. This weekend, I've got a couple things going on. You know, I just did Gilbert Gottfried's podcast, which you can find online now, and that was a great
deal. I can't wait to hear this.
The two of you together really is what dreams are made of.
If only I could talk like this. But then this Saturday, I'll be at Zany's recording Dana Gould's podcast
with excellent.
Him. I'm not sure when it will air, but 2 o'clock on Saturday, I think tickets are on sale now.
Yep.
And then Saturday night, I'm up in Crystal Lake at the Rao Center for a magic show called Nothing Up My Sleeve, and a bunch of magicians doing stuff. I'm going to appear there. And when I say I'm doing an appearance,
you mean it.
I mean it.
Yeah.
And I get to meet people up there. So that pretty much is like the tail end of my Halloween season.
That's a lot of stuff going on. There.
Because
that's
after
bunch.
That, of course, it's time for Sventa Claus.
Oh, that's
we'll get
right.
to that, you know, in about 3 weeks after.
Beautiful.
That.
We're super fans. I'll
we
give you that.
We are tremendous fans. It's Rich Coase. It's Svengoolie. Watch him and love him. We'll take a quick break when we'll find out what Steve has next. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
All right, we are going to go upstairs to the stream on this Halloween. It's going to be our spooktacular as it continues. Steve Bertrand will stay here with the Wintrust Business Lunch. Yeah.